From an early age, we're all immersed in sport. For some, it fails to ignite a spark inside us. But for those of us who catch the fire, it's the beginning of a lifelong journey filled with highs and lows, which all matter far more than they should. After all, it's just a game, we're told. Sport is a certainty. It's a point of reference in an increasingly uncertain world. And the bonds formed with either sport in general or a hometown club transcend both time and generations. Today, much of what sport has always meant to true fans has been somehow lost in a blizzard of corporate communications, fireworks, and froth. The attachments that were once so strong seem more trivial in the global age of televised sport as entertainment. What was once authentic has become increasingly staged. In this podcast, we'll get back to the things that sport has always meant to true fans. We'll take you from the boardroom to the dressing room to the pitch, but we'll do it not as a corporate communication, but as true fans of sport, and we'll do it with authenticity. We'll be honest, and we'll speak our minds. This is a podcast for true sports fans, and the one thing all fans have in common is a passion for the game. Now, we certainly don't mean to cause any offence, so if you find yourself taking any, just shrug it off and get back in the game, because this is about the game, and the game is bigger than all of us.
We've got some fresh new young talent doing some things that I know you haven't heard before.
One, two, three, listen.
Well, welcome everybody to this latest edition of Are You Not Entertained? Joining me from the warmth and sunshine, hopefully, of Lake Como, Roger Mitchell. Rog, come in.
Hi, Grant, how are you? It is indeed.
Mate, I'm very well.
Are you? Are you really? I know you're in London.
Briefly.
Very briefly. No, you're right, I'm on Lake Como. I'm recuperating a little bit. I feel a little bit like Daniel Craig at the end of Casino Royale as he recuperates on Lake Como. I don't have Eve Green here, but it's that kind of vibe.
I hate to be the one to break it to you. You're also not Daniel Craig.
No, really? But yeah, that's the whole vibe. It's very misty this morning here on the lake and it feels very peaceful.
Yeah, very nice too. Very nice. You're making me jealous as I sit in an airport hotel on my brief stopover back to the even colder climes of New York, but never mind.
But you did go to the cottage last night, did you not?
I did.
You know, when was the last time you were there?
Yes, I was trying to think, it was a few years ago, and I was with a Belgian cameraman sitting in the airport in Florence, and we had literally had an overnight stop in London, and we were going to get in time to maybe make it out to Craven Cottage. And I asked him, I said, do you want to come watch Fulham play Leicester? And he said, yes, of course. so we landed at City Airport at, you know, 4 o'clock with 3.5 hours to get to the game.
Plenty.
I booked the tickets. And let me tell you, Rog, the tickets now compared to what they cost when I went with my dad every other week back in the day. Whoa, mama.
Ooh.
But the place, it was hard to get seats together. I mean, the place was packed. It was fantastic. So
it's all that arbitrage to get to see the big six club teams.
Well, exactly right. So we schlep over there. It takes us over 3 hours to get from London City Airport.
Really?
Out, drop our bags and go to the game. So we missed the first half.
Oh, God.
Which is just heartbreaking, especially as Fulham go ahead on the 42nd minute. So we get there and all the doors are shut. So I'm walking around outside with my phone trying to find someone to let us in to the ground. And, I'm knocking on doors. The ticket office is shut. There's a few hamburger sellers outside. There's a couple of stewards. What was Hercule Poirot saying at this point? Well, look, they were all... it just looked a bit bewildered, frankly. I remember back in the day when I was growing up, my dad used to take me. I mean, they had people outside the ground throwing fans in. Never mind not letting them in. It was a different era back then. We eventually found someone that let us in at the stand at one end. We had to sneak in through that stand, up the stairs, down, under, and got back to our seats. Got there just in time.
For them to equalise.
No. It's funny. Fulham played well. They
can you see the difference? You see the difference under Claudio?
Not yet. But do you know what? It was a wet night. The ball was very, very slick. The surface was slick. It was tough conditions.
But they
put up a good show. They put up a good show. It was disappointing that they drew, which is a nice change of mindset for a Fulham fan this year. Leicester, I've got to say, they weren't great, but James Maddison, he's a real player. He's a very, very talented young man. So he's definitely one to watch. But no, it was great. It's something about being at Craven Cottage under the floodlights. And of course, for my Belgian friend, going to a football stadium that from the front looks like a row of terraced houses, he's like, what is this? Where is the football club? It was We had a good time. It was a fun night.
Fantastic, as it should be. Good. I'm glad you saw your team.
But as always in a goal own goal segment, I'm going to be the gentleman and let you go first with whatever takes your fancy.
Okay. Well, before I get into the formal goal, I need to make a mention for Kilmarnock. Kilmarnock are top of the Scottish Premier League. Now, I know we don't want to
Kilmarnock are also my goal for the week. You bad bastard.
Well, okay. Well, since it's more interesting for you to talk about it, fire away. Tell me why they're your goal.
Well, listen. I mean, I hate taking this back to Scottish football, but you know what? It damn well deserves to be.
It does this week. It does.
Yeah, Killy. They've top of the Scottish Premier League. They've won the title once in 1964-65. And the club has a total of, I've been looking this up, Roger, as you can tell. The club has a total of 5 honours, which makes them the 7th most successful club in Scottish history, which is remarkable. But now this is a club that several years ago almost got relegated. They have a new manager in Steve Clark who is working miracles with them, and they find themselves just about at the halfway point of the season ahead of Celtic and Rangers, which is fantastic. And given what happened with Leicester City a few years ago, suddenly fans of clubs like Kilmarnock can maybe just dream a wee bit about what might happen if they can keep this up. And Leicester have proven that it's possible. You know, this is a 150-year-old football club.
It is a great club, and people. Yeah. This isn't some kind of Sutton United that's come up. Kilmarnock is a very historical club.
Well, they've played in the European Cup. They've played in the UEFA Cup. They've played in the Cup Winners' Cup
with distinction. With distinction as well.
With distinction, they got to the semi-finals.
Can you believe that?
66-67. Yeah, unbelievable. No, exactly right. So I'm just delighted. And you know what? In the broader sense as well, with what Steven Gerrard's doing at Rangers, Scottish football, which has just been a procession for Celtic for a decade now, is suddenly becoming interesting again, Roger, which must be fantastic news for you.
Well, you know, that's why I wanted you to talk about it, because I've got a bias there. Let's take those in turn. Steve Clark. Steve Clark gets appointed about 13 months ago. Kilmarnock are probably bottom of the league, if not bottom, second bottom. They're going down. It is not talked enough about what he's done there. You know, like, that is astonishing to take a team that's going south rapidly within 12 months with what would have been only one transfer window, maybe only one, and he's done that with basically the same players. That's not normal, Grant. And this guy is going under the radar. I saw, Southampton appointed a manager yesterday. I mean, why aren't they looking at somebody like him?
Well, look, he spent a lot of time under Jose Mourinho at
Chelsea.
His pedigree. He's been an assistant coach at Liverpool, at West Ham,
top guy,
Aston Villa, and you're right. I mean, I think the reason Southampton went for their manager, the manager they did, was he's a much, much better Scrabble score than Steve Clark is. That's the only reason I can think of, anyway.
So we've got Steve Clark, which I honestly think if we spent the whole podcast on him, it still wouldn't be enough credit. Secondly, as you say, Kilmarnock is a great club. When I was there and doing what I did, I always loved going to Rugby Park. They gave me so much support. At the time, it was owned by the local hotelier, Bill Costley, who's got a whole collection of places around there that are just wonderful in Ayrshire. Wonderful club, one of the best steak pies at halftime you will ever get. I think I put on 2 kilos solely due to them, and a fantastic support. And it's 30 years, Grant, since anybody outside the old firm has ever won in Scotland.
Yeah, exactly.
Now they're not going to win. You know, like, you can throw Leicester at me, you can, whatever you want, they're not going to win. They go to Celtic. They're not, Grant.
You know, they go to Celtic this weekend, right?
I hear you.
But this, we were all saying this about Leicester. We were all saying.
Yeah,
this,
but this is Scotland.
I know. It is. But this is what makes it so great, because
it is a great story.
You know, in Scotland, let's face it, there's two teams they've got to beat to that title.
It's very harsh.
It's true though. Come on, in recent years, it had been one team they had to beat to that title. Whereas in England, Leicester had to beat, you know, four or five, maybe six real contenders. And I remember at this point in that Leicester season, just saying, oh, they'll never win. And then they were, you know, up there at Christmas, and you say, well yeah, they're still very low shot. And it really wasn't until you got to sort of March.
I remember it well.
That you kind of, yeah. The whole country was going, come on, Leicester, this would be amazing. And they somehow did it. So, you know, don't write Killy off just yet.
No, I don't. And like you say about the profile, it's wonderful because... That's great to see their name at the top. The Steven Gerrard thing, I think we should spend a wee bit of time on that, especially on the...
Well, you know, called this, Roger. You called this perfectly.
What did I say? I can't remember.
No, but before, when he got the job, you said this is a big, big deal.
Yeah, and a lot of people, and especially a lot of my Celtic colleagues, my Celtic brethren, they gave me a hard time for this because...
They did.
Yeah, but they always, even today, you know, like the Rangers were top of the league at the weekend, and I said, look, I did kind of say that this guy was different. The thing I like about Gerrard is that he's got winner's eyes, and, you know, you can see that he's got a poor squad there, they don't play particularly good football, but I'm a great believer in the force of nature and the force of determination in sport, and he's got those eyes. And I think he's got that team playing well above where they should be. We'll see again before the year's out. Celtic have to go to Ibrox. And that's one of those what I call bully in the playground moments, you know, where Celtic will go there as the top guy. And if they give Rangers a doing, I think Rangers may have a very difficult second half of the season. If Rangers compete, if Steven Gerrard gets them to compete, then I think we've got a very interesting season. We had the League Cup final last weekend. Aberdeen did very, very well. And, you know, you're right. I think Scottish football you know what Scottish football's got? It's authentic, absolutely authentic. It doesn't pretend to be anything that it's not. It knows that it's been massively disadvantaged because of the monies of the big television markets. But the fans there are solid and true to what their football club is about, and none better than Kilmarnock, I have to say, Grant.
Well, let me ask you a question, Rog. As a staunch Celtic fan...
That word is really to be used for Rangers, but you don't know these kind of subtleties.
All right, fine. A die-hard Celtic fan, die-hard Celtic fan. But also someone who... wants the best for Scottish football.
No. I don't want them to win. Absolutely not.
You've got to let me ask the question.
We need to get how 10 long, in a row.
How long were Rangers to win the title? How long after they won it would it take you before you went, oh, geez, I bet it's... Well, at least it's good for the game.
No, that wouldn't happen at all. if Rangers have got a leap going into spring and coming out and that, then I would be bringing out the usual things about... referees being against Celtic, or the Rangers being the establishment team, all that kind of stuff.
In my goal every week will be somehow finding a way to cram Rangers into it, obviously.
Of course. But no, so hats off to Kelly and hats off to Steve Clarke. And a nice little moment for Scottish football. I think it is a moment that we can celebrate without it being a little bit forced.
Well, I shall be rooting for Killy the rest of the way. All right, what's your... Well, pick one. You got a goal? You got an own goal?
I had a second one because I thought you might. It's because it was such a great story. My real goal is that it has to be Tyson Fury.
That was my other one. So good. I'm glad you picked this one.
Yeah, I mentioned on the last one, I think, about boxing coming into a potential golden era. A couple of people came on to me and said they actually liked that, and they liked that idea and they thought that was correct. What we saw at the weekend there is everything that what I mean when I say it's a golden era. I actually am a big fan of boxing. For all the reasons I said the last time, I won't repeat them, but you saw them personified at the weekend, especially in what he did after the fight. Never mind the kind of like the Undertaker, you know, getting up from the canvas type thing. That in itself was extraordinary because that left hook was absolutely devastating.
Devastating.
You could hear it. I mean, boom. Like, so he gets up from that. And then afterwards, the press conference, American Pie, you know, like how cool was that? And then he makes a speech about saying, you know, I've suffered from mental health. You know, this is for all the people that are struggling, because there are a lot of people that struggle from mental health. It's one of those things that people don't talk about enough. So this guy and his sport is absolutely the poster child for everything that I think boxing should be. And, you know, now, you know, the 2 or 3 days after, what have you got? You've got, you know, Barry Hearn saying, we've got AJ and you're not getting him, you know, and you know, is it going to be a rematch or is it not? Is Tyson going to, you know, and all of a sudden, you've got a category alive again, you know, the heavyweight category. And I tell you, with the backing of the Zone and everything like that, we're going to see boxing come back the way it was in the 80s. I'm sure of it, Grant.
Well, listen, As I said when we last spoke about this, Roger, I hope and pray you're right, because it's an amazing spectacle when you get a group of good fighters like those 80s middleweights we talked about, and you know, hopefully that's what happens here. That in recent years all the good boxers have avoided each other until they just wanted those big paydays at the end of their career, but the Tyson Fury performance was amazing. Now, you know, we have to talk about the fact that when he was the champion a few years ago, you know, we had all the homophobic comments and the rants and all that stuff. So, you know, there's a dark side to this guy.
Mental health problems.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. As I say, that is polarizing. And you know, when he was going through all those issues, people were very, very quick to jump on him and give him all kinds of grief, and he was a pariah in the media. And held up as everything that you shouldn't be as a top sportsman. So, you know, it's great for him that he's getting this recognition for what was just a phenomenal performance. I mean, it was remarkable.
Remarkable.
But you know, he's a complicated person,
and that's good. He's complex, isn't a vice.
It's exceptional. Look, remember Mike Tyson, right? Remember in his heyday, he was an incredibly complicated person. Obviously, that went down a very dark path. But he, again, redemption for him in the later years with how he's sort of reinvented himself as a stand-up comic, amongst other things, and a movie star. But boxing has this ability to bring these characters onto the world stage. And, you know, I go back and forth with this, Rog, because so much of it is down to the promoters stirring up, you know, animus at weigh-ins and all this stuff that seems so fake. But it's the one sport, you and I talk about authenticity, it's the one sport where you strip away all the nonsense and
no hiding place.
You have two men in a square ring trying to beat the living daylights each other, and that's right. It is truly authentic. There's nothing. So I like you. I hope and pray we are entering another golden age of boxing, and I will reconsider my decision to avoid paying for pay per view matches.
Well, that's the point, Grant. It's not going to be a pay per view model. It's going to be a different thing. And you know, you mentioned Tyson. You know, the whole Cusumato father figure that he provided to Mike Tyson. That's beautiful. That story there is exactly what I'm talking about. You know, it's all social inclusion and marginalization, and getting people that are in the social underclass and the underbelly and don't have a chance in life. And boxing does that for them. And you know, Tyson Fury, I think, personified it completely. So good luck to him, and fantastic singing. And let's hope that he keeps it all together and doesn't go back down to the bipolar side again.
Amen to that. All right, well, look, I guess that leaves my own goal for the week. And there were a couple, actually, Rog, one of which I'm sure you and I are both all over. I'll save that one for second. But the first one is the Crystal Palace training ground. I don't know if you saw this story.
No.
The Crystal Palace's training ground in Beckenham. And I'm going to give a big shout out to my mate Andy Bars here, who's a Beckenham Ranger and a big Palace fan. Palace's training ground in Beckenham was given a zero food hygiene rating by the health inspectors because apparently it had been infested with mice for several months. Now, I don't know how you get a zero food hygiene rating, and I have a feeling that part of that may have been for some of the team's performances of late, but to see your training facility infested with mice for several months has to be my own goal of the week, and a lot of my Palace fan friends are getting a good deal of ribbing about this, as you can probably imagine.
Well, you know, it's incredible, isn't it? This is the richest league in the world.
I know.
You know, like, we're not in bloody, you know, Bolivia here. You know, so apologies to Bolivia. No disrespect, but this is
to all our Bolivian fans out there.
All our listeners.
other awful leagues are available.
Yes, but you know what I mean. You know, like, where are you spending that money on?
I know.
I mean, there's a lot of money in the English game, and you can't call in, you know, rent a rat or whatever it's called. You know, like. You know, like, what do you call it these days? I don't know. Rent-a-kill.
I think rent-a-kill is a whole other sort of business.
Rent-a-kill. You know, like, come on. It's not that expensive. But there you go.
Well, when you think of the money they wasted on Mamadou Sakho, then, you know, they
can't believe
they could have got rent-a-kill.
They could have. And this, listen, you know, this is the issue with football, you know, and I know this very, very well. You can have trouble getting approval for a new set of paper clips for the stationery cupboards, but if you want a new player that costs, you know, 100 grand a week, no problem. This is football. It's everybody listening to this will empathize. They couldn't get Rent-A-Kill approved, but they've got this guy that you just mentioned.
I have to ask this. If anyone out there, I've watched Sakho play when he played for Liverpool and when he played for Palace. And I'd love someone to tell me I'm mad, or but if you've ever noticed, if you watch him, he can't kick a football. I'm serious. Watch it. Just find some footage of him somewhere. He kicks the ball like someone who is trying to kick a ball right-footed who's left-footed, or vice versa. It's really weird. I can't even describe it, but find some footage of him on YouTube. Watch him kick a football and then tell me there's something very, very weird about how he does it, and it looks like a real struggle for him.
I will do that. You may be right. These things happen, Grant. Listen, let's not go down that whole, you know, bung route and director of football and agents having nice little arrangements, but these things happen more than you think.
At all, Rog. All right, well, look, what's your goal?
I want to come back to something that I think we mentioned on the first podcast with Pat, which is Man United.
Okay, good.
We had this week Jose Mourinho implicitly, explicitly calling Paul Pogba a virus. I don't know whether
a
you
virus,
caught that.
Yeah. I did see that, yeah.
Now, I mean, that's dramatic. So here's why this is my own goal. To all of us that love football, to all of us that are, you know, the boys that can appreciate football, it's 7 years that this club has been out of balance. It's since Sir Alex Ferguson left that they don't know what they're doing. Now, it's a real problem, because what you have is you've got an American owner who did a very clever leveraged buyout to basically use the club's cash flow to finance the purchase, getting a very, very healthy stream of dividends out of this club. And for him, he may even think that there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with Man United, because it's doing what it's meant to do. And this is the problem. What it's meant to do is not provide the Lasers with a dividend stream. What it's meant to do is be certainly challenging every year to be the leading club in England and being in the last four, certainly last eight of the Champions League. This is Man United. So you've got the boardroom like that. You've got below it's a collection of players personified by Pogba that are just, I'm not sure I would say virus, but not in the same direction as the kind of guys that were around before, the Norman Whitesides, the Brian Robsons, McGrath, and then all of Fergie's teams. Man United have always had a view about players being players. And Pogba's not, is not that. You know, I'm actually glad. I've never been a big fan, you know that. And you know, I think Man United is in one hell of a state. And I just wonder what's going to happen now, because it can't go on like this. And it's symptomatic of what happened at Sunderland. We may have Martin Bain on to talk about that in a future broadcast. Symptomatic what has happened at other clubs that are owned by people that don't get the feeling of when a club is in balance and not in balance. Man United is a shambles, Grant.
I don't disagree with you, Rog, but let's think about this for a second, because the problem they have, I think, is that they couldn't, for example, they couldn't hire a Steve Clarke as manager. They have to go and hire a high-profile manager, right? It wouldn't work. The Man United fans, if they said, "Oh, we're gonna bring Steve Clarke in from Killy," I mean, the fact that he was obviously an ex-Chelsea fan probably wouldn't go down well with them anyway. But they couldn't bring in someone who has been proven to be a great man manager. When you talk about what Steve Clarke's done with that same group of players,
I don't think it's a manager issue. You know, I think the manager is a sacrificial lamb in the middle between a boardroom that acts like the way I said, and a group of players that are leaderless. And that's not down to the manager. It's because of the culture. You know, well, on you go.
No, I say, the problem is, I think Pogba was probably brought in to potentially be that leader. But it's hard when you're that age and you're surrounded by, you know, big name players. It's hard to be brought in as this, you know, fighting midfielder in the sort of a talented Roy Keane, if you like. No knock on Keane's talent. He was prodigiously talented. But you know what I mean? Flair type Roy Keane. You're put in there. It's difficult. It's a difficult role to be given unless you are like Keane, who said, "I'm taking that role. That's my role. I'm taking it. Anyone wants to try and take it off me, take your best shot." And I don't see that in United. I agree with you. I don't see a natural.
These are the symptoms. Leader. What you're talking about are the symptoms. What I'm talking about is the cancer at the top. It is a club almost destined to fail now because the balance, the force is out of balance. You can't have, you know, a guy 3,000 miles away counting his dividend checks, a CEO who doesn't really know football, probably doesn't understand promotion and relegation. No director of football, Jose being the way he is and being very, very egocentric, and players that have got agents like Mino Raiola. I mean, how does anybody expect that's going to work out well? That's the macro problem I'm talking about. All these little issues about whether Pogba's right or wrong or whether Jose's the right guy or not, it's a symptom. Man United need to stop and say, where are we going to be in 5 years? Because the way they're going just now, they're going to be fifth or sixth in the Premier League every year. And that's not where Man United need to be. Somebody needs to take grip there.
Well, I mean, maybe that somebody will be another stupendously wealthy buyer that comes in. I mean, obviously, if you're going to spend a lot of money on a club, I mean, the kind of money you spent on Man City or Abramovich spent on Chelsea, to do that with Man United would be a very interesting exercise for the casual fan, that's for sure.
Yeah, so anyway, that's my own goal of the week. It's sad. I've always had a soft spot for United, like in the Rod Stewart song, Celtic United. But yeah. This is bad. This is really, really bad now. And I feel sorry Jose.
Well, look, there's one other own goal that we have to talk about. And I've got a couple of views on it, and that is the Ballon d'Or Female Footballer of the Year Award, obviously went down this week. And Norway's second most famous comedian, there's a laurel to wear with pride, made a very inappropriate comment about twerking to the lady.
The winner. The
first female Ballon d'Or. And this, I mean, it's opened up such a can of worms, and for very good reason. I mean, a totally inappropriate remark. You know, everything that's bad about sexism in sport, I mean, it was just appalling. But this guy, I mean, in this Me Too era, the guy's a comedian, he's on stage, he's on a live show, and he makes what he thinks at the time is a joke. It turns out it was a very bad joke. It was a very inappropriate joke. He's not in sport, you know, he's a comedian. So when people talk about this being the sexism in sport, it's not. It's a comedian having a bad day. Now, I totally understand the sensitivity around it. I, I, I get it. But we don't seem to have the ability anymore for someone to make an inappropriate remark and go, oh, look, yeah, sorry, you know, that was a bit off. I got that wrong. And it's over. I've been reading about this story for a week, all over the news, all over the sports news. And I get it. I totally get it. But this poor guy, I mean, you know, when you're on there on stage on live TV, being told to be funny and irreverent on a sports event, I mean, give him a break.
No.
Give him a hard time for a couple of days.
No, Grant, I'm sorry. So, yeah, he's the wrong guy. This is an issue for sports award events. You've got to do it with a professional. You can't have some...
Yes.
And this, again, comes back, let's make it entertainment, let's make it Hollywood. Well, yes. No, it's a little bit more important than that. And this is what happens when you try and be funny and you try and appeal to a different audience. This is the first time women's football's had that platform. She's the first winner. You know, a really, really important moment, not just for women's football, but for all of football.
Absolutely.
And this joker comes out with that, you know? And okay, wait, did you see him? I mean, like, did you the video afterwards? You know,
it was awful. It was.
But did you see how he was dressed? You know, like,
yes.
Bad
yes.
Shirt and tie combo. Really, like 10-year-old bomber jacket. Really bad haircut. This guy's a loser. You know, and he did. He was not sensitive enough to realize that this was an important moment. And you know, this. Oh well, you know, it's not a sports problem. Let's put it down to a bad comedian. We talked about this in I think it was episode 0 when we were trialing out the podcast, Jim Courier, when he interviewed, yeah. I can't remember the girl's name now.
Was it Konnikova?
No, it wasn't, but it was an Eastern European name, I believe, where he was interviewing her after she'd won, so she was a winner that day. And he made a comment about, well, in general, do you prefer to play indoors and outdoors or outdoors? And she said, well, actually, I prefer to play indoors tennis. And he says, well, is that because you can keep your hair more under control?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, honestly, we don't see it, but there's a lot of that undercurrent in sport. And women, I think, take it with a lot of good grace because it's not the odd little episode. It's always...
Oh, I agree with you. And I thought the poor girl handled it
beautifully.
I
mean, yeah.
She really did. She handled it superbly. And you know, it's awful that she had to. But it's if you hire a second rate comedian to host an award show, this is what you get. Your point is that was an important night. You should have someone of with gravitas in the game to give out these big awards and to do this stuff. It's ludicrous. But again, if you do that and you put the wrong guy on the wrong stage and he says the wrong thing, You've always got to expect it, right?
Yeah, that's my point. This is, you know, well, like, we need to appeal to a different audience, a younger audience. Let's not make it all the usual football too niche. That's what happens. To present sport, to market sport, it's a delicate, delicate flower. And you have to do it with professionals or you get what happened there. And, you know, if that was my daughter there, I would be hunting that guy. You know, like that I would be hunting him down because that I was really, really angry at that. And you know, I can imagine she's done, you know, she's maybe started football. It was not whatever the rest of her peers were doing. She got passionate about it. She got really good at it. She becomes number one in the world, the first one honored like this. And he makes a joke about sticking her backside out. You know, it's just not on, Grant. It really is. So, yeah, another own goal for sure.
All right. Well, we can't leave this guy and go without just a word to anyone out there that isn't familiar with Kilmarnock. I would urge you to Google the club's crest because the only way I can describe it is two squirrels fighting over a football and someone giving them the finger. It's a remarkably fantastic crest that I would urge you to check out.
Remarkable club as well. Good stuff.
All right. Well, so, Rog, that's goal on goal in the bag. Why don't you tell people who our upcoming guest is on the next show? Because this is one that you and I have both been looking forward to.
It is. We've got Giles Morgan, who is the ex-global head of sponsorship for HSBC. So not somebody whose name would automatically fly out at you if you weren't from the industry, but he has probably financed most of the sport that you've enjoyed over the last 20 years. we've all enjoyed over there, whether that's golf, rugby, a whole selection of sports. He has sponsored sport coming from a love of Welsh rugby specifically, but also cricket, which he played, and a huge Bjorn Borg fan as well. So I think Giles would be considered in the industry as somebody who's treated sponsorship with the kind of gloves, kid gloves, that I was talking about with that precious flower. He knows how to do it. He's now moved on from the bank and taken those skills into advising rights holders, sponsors, broadcast companies, early stage sport tech companies, into everything about where sport is going and how to do it properly. And he's going to come on and he's going to tell us a little bit about his background and how he's used that in his career to date and why he's so optimistic about football and sport going forward.
My grandfather was an absolute nutter about Welsh rugby, and I would sit on my grandfather's knee, as little boys do, and listen to his stories. And such was his passion for Welsh rugby that he used to tell a story where in 1933 he and a whole bunch of mates came down to Twickenham for the first time ever they'd left Wales, let alone anywhere else. There was no Severn Bridge, obviously, in those days. And they came down on the train to Twickenham and they beat England. And to hear my grandfather telling the story about the three things I remember. One, he said, I threw my hat in the air and I never saw it come down again. He then tells a story. He told the story of they were so overjoyed as they came back to Twickenham Station, a few of them overturned a car and left it on its roof, which I thought was scandalous and so unlike this besuited Welsh farmer who was sitting spluttering in his armchair. And he fell asleep on the train standing up because it was that packed and that full of joy and celebration. Men's tennis in particular, we've had a decade more, in fact, of arguably three, possibly four of the greatest players. If Federer is the greatest, Djokovic and Nadal cannot be far behind. But it's been their rivalry, and obviously you put Andy Murray into the mix there too. We've had an astonishing moment where yin and yang have played, and you know, I think I've mentioned this before. I've been asked often what is my favourite or greatest ever sporting moment, and without hesitation, it's 2008 Centre Court when Nadal just beat Federer at Wimbledon in the dark, because it was the two greatest tennis players, I believe, of all time playing at the height of their powers, and you sort of feel it could have gone on forever. The respect that those two have for each other is very palpable. And they would argue in the way that Borg and McEnroe had, that there was they required each other. And I think those rivalries in sport are, again, why for me, certainly tennis has been so magical. When you think most of the modern sports were invented in some form over the last 150 years, really during the Victorian era when they were formalised and rules were put to sports and then evolved, and obviously in America then that happened towards the end of the 19th century. And whilst there was technological advances from the 1850s onwards, particularly radio and television, changing sports, they were still quite passive accompaniments which allowed people to follow sport. But actually the sports of rule changes in football is that the cameras would come in and would view a game of football. They were there just to televise that to people who couldn't be there. But the sports themselves were quite fundamental. What's happened now, though, is that all of our lives in the last, if we think of the last 5 years, let alone 10 or 15, the technological advances in human science are the most accelerated in human history. And the fact that the iPhone or the Android effectively makes us semi-Android as a kind of robot, where everything from, they're not telephones, they are our lives. Therefore, everything we consume has changed. How we buy everything, how we do anything. You can't get lost anymore. You've got a map. Everything has changed. And therefore, sport, which is, after all, only a reflection of the society we live in, will have to change.
Fantastic. Well, I can't wait for that. All right. Well, before we go, just a quick reminder to everybody listening out there, please do share the podcast, give us a review on iTunes, and tell your friends. We'd love to build the audience for this.
If you building, Grant. It is building.
I know it is. I know it is, Rog. But as always, we're greedy. We want more.
We do.
If you want to follow us on Twitter, you'll find us at EntertainedR. That's Entertained A-R-E. You can follow me at TTMYGH.
And you can follow me at RPM Como, as in the lake.
As in the lake, as always.
As always.
All right. Well, thanks again, Rog.
And, thanks, Grant. Enjoy London.
We'll talk to you when we have Jars with us.
We will. Take care. Bye.